Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Today, my guest is April Michelski. Before I bring her on, just a couple of announcements. First, you can always get new episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all podcast platforms. Check us out on Rockfin. This is where you get our premium content and all the amazing content from every creator on Rockfin. Check out the new podcasts on the Forbidden Knowledge Network, and you can get them all in one place. Our website, forbiddenknowledge.news. We've got some new ones coming up. We've got amazing creators on there. Go check that out. Also, check out our Facebook pages. Those links are in the description as well. You can follow us there to get show announcements, updates, and other important information. And check out our merch store. You can get shirts, hoodies, stickers, mugs, all kinds of cool FKN gear. And finally, guys, go check out C60 Purple Power, maybe the most powerful antioxidant known to man. You hear me talk about it every show, but go check it out for yourself. See what the benefits could be to you. That link is in the description. And if you order through the link, you get 10% off your order plus free shipping. Today I want to welcome back to the show April Michelski. She is the founder and executive administrator for Lenny's Love, Inc., a nonprofit dedicated to raising suicide awareness and promoting mental health wellness through authentic conversation. Coming soon, she will be hosting a new podcast on the Forbidden Knowledge Network called The Ancient Gift. In the past 3 years, her world changed forever after the suicide of her brother. Through a consciousness shift she describes as an awakening or knowing. This shift has opened her to new experiences and people, which has led her on her soul's journey of discovery. She is hoping to spread hope through honesty and authentic conversation with people from all backgrounds and experiences through Lenny's Love and her podcast, The Ancient Gift. In her fantasy sci-fi fictional book, she creates a world of three realms which magical ancient beings managed all life's existence. Her book weaves a tale of our disconnection of humanity's life purpose and deeper connection to the consciousness through our soul's journey. April, welcome back. How you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me back.
Oh, you're welcome. It's great to have you back. And like I said in the intro, we are looking forward to featuring your new podcast, The Ancient Gift. That's going to be awesome. Last time you were on, we talked a little bit about the book you're working on and touched on what brought you down your path and ultimately what led you to write your book and want to do the podcast. Today, I want to learn more about you and the amazing path that you've been on. You're telling me that you had a very interesting and eventful childhood, right?
I certainly did.
Well, that's a good place to start. Tell us a little bit about it. What kind of led you down this path?
Just for the record, everybody, I didn't know he was going to ask me this, so I'm a little caught off guard. So thank you for doing that.
I like to do that. You're welcome.
Yeah, you're very good at this. Okay, so my childhood was very eventful. I really hate to go into details about it, and it's not because there's anything I'm ashamed of. It's just that...
Oh, whatever you feel comfortable with, of course.
No, it's okay. It's okay. But typically when I talk about it, people have had experience of upsetting people because they can't believe some of the things that I've gone through. And so, I think I have maybe a little bit of a twisted sense of humor because I laugh about a lot of it. I think that's what helps me get through like rough times. So... But I'll give you an example. When I was 8, my father was working over in the Middle East. He built a lot of the infrastructure in the Middle East back in the 80s and 90s, 70s, 80s and 90s. And my mother was an alcoholic, and I was living with my brother and sister. They're quite a bit older than me. They were teenagers in high school. And my mother asked us if we wanted a Happy Meal, because Happy Meals had just come out. And we're like, yes. So we waited. And 2 months later, she came back with a Happy Meal. So she left us three kids by ourselves in a house. And we fended for ourselves for quite a long time. And typically I don't air this story, but it's okay, because you have to talk about these things. And this is why a lot of us have mental health issues when we get older, because we have traumatic things like this happen to us when we're younger. And we don't really ever deal with them, or we're told to suck it up, and therefore it just kind of lingers in us and then evolves into massive mental health issues. And because of this, I believe that's probably one of the major reasons I lost my brother to suicide in 2018. So And it kind of ties into what we're going to talk about today, with the nonprofit and the book and just everything I'm doing right now currently in my life. Although they're different in some ways, it all ties back together in like universal consciousness and love for self and love for each other. So I think that that's the biggest message of anything I can give, everything I can give everybody is that universal message of hope and love. So
definitely. Now, I know you have your nonprofit, Lenny's Love, and that's going to be a big part of what we're talking about. What brought you to form that nonprofit, and it was what happened to your brother. I know it's probably a little difficult to talk about, but also important based on what we're going to be discussing. So if you could, what was it that actually happened there?
Well, my brother joined the service at 17. He right out of high school, and he, you know, immediately got into jump school, which is jumping out of airplanes and helicopters in the Army. And then he eventually got into warrant officer school and became a helicopter pilot. So he flew helicopters for about 29 and a half years through the 80s and 90s and into the 2000s. And he also did private work in Iraq, Iran, and Afghanistan. I believe I'm right. I know it's Iraq, at least, and Afghanistan. Might not be Iran. But anyway, at any rate, and he flew a lot of combat missions around the world, not just in the Middle East. So in doing that, he, you know, saw a lot of death. And about 6 months before he died, he, you know, he loved flying. Don't get me wrong, loved it. But he said, like, April, I got to find something else to do. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You love flying. What else would you do if you weren't a pilot, you know? And he's like, I'm just sick of killing people for a living. And I think it was like at that point where I kind of obviously took notice because, I mean, I didn't think my brother was suffering from PTSD, combat PTSD, but I never really thought of his job in that way. I just said, oh, he's in the Army. He's a, you know, helicopter pilot. He's overseas. He's, you know, on a combat tour. And, but we don't really think about that, right? We don't think of like the long-term implications and ramifications of somebody's job like that, whether they're infantry or a helicopter pilot, or it doesn't really matter, right? Because you're seeing death every day. Whether you're the one causing it because you're bombing, or whether you want, you know, coming up on a village and seeing people being, you know, little children being killed, it's still going to mentally affect you, right? So I think that I personally, as a sister and my other sisters as well, we didn't really understand or realize the severity of his PTSD. I mean, he's always been a little paranoid. We would say, oh, he's paranoid, you know, don't, you know, stand next to a window in a hotel. And, you know, he was special ops and stuff like that. So, and we used to, oh, that's Lenny, you know, ha ha. But we didn't realize the severity of it. Like he wasn't sleeping. He had night terrors. Like he never slept, never slept. So a big part of my mission with Lenny's Love, is to really raise suicide awareness and to destigmatize the subject. And I say that because it's not just suicide itself, it's mental health. You know, if you're in the service and you reach out for mental health, you know, you still today, you are put down, you are, you know, hazed, you know, you're given a hard time. And I know this because I've talked to a lot of service people that are young, that are, you know, right out of the military or a few years out of the military. And they've told me some of their stories about what they've went through. So it's still, and that's just not the military. We're talking across the board in the United States. It's, you know, let's face it. We just don't treat mental healthness, illness with the same kind of revere as we treat breast cancer or diabetes or, you know, leukemia, right? So if we could hold that kind of vigilance and open-mindedness to this disease, then I think we would have a lot better outcome with like the suicide rate with veterans, which are about 27 a day now, which is over 10,000 a year.
Right. You're absolutely right that it is across the board, not just with veterans, but with military veterans especially. The suicide rate and the stories I hear of, you know, depression and attempted suicide coming out of people who are veterans is very alarming. And I think that especially people that I know, a lot of them have joined the service due to some sort of childhood trauma that they're maybe trying to fill or cover by going into the military, which causes even more trauma for them. Is this something you've experienced, you know, with the people you've worked with as well?
Right. Yes. So personally, I'll unleash, and I talk very openly about my struggles. And I call it my previous life because I feel like 20, 30 years ago, or even 5 years ago, I'm a completely different person because of my brother's death and the path before he died in like 2000 and April 1st of 2015, I attempted suicide. So I survived it, obviously, and I'm very grateful. And my brother really kind of nursed me back that, year. It took me about a year to really kind of come out of, I want to call it like a, it's like a haze. Like you're just not, you're there, but you're not there. You might laugh, you might have a good time, you might, be with other people, but in the back of your mind, that thought of suicide is always present. And what people don't understand is when you have PTSD, whether it's childhood related or trauma related or combat related, it changes the chemical balance and the chemicals in your brain. So it basically rewires you. And I want to say this, I am no doctor or a psychiatrist or a therapist, but I've done a lot of reading on it. And it's basically an illness that we know so little about. I mean, let's face it, how much do we really know about the human brain? I mean, we're making discoveries every day about our capabilities and, what kind of things we can do with our, our brain power, basically. So we're just kind of in the infancy of like realizing as these like magnificent creatures that we are as human, human beings, Homo sapiens sapiens, like what we're capable of. And the only way to really explore this topic is for people like me who, even telling you that I tried suicide, I used to be like, big lump in my throat. Like I can't say this in public. I'm so embarrassed about it. But that's like the first, the first part of eradicating stigma. You have to be able to have that open conversation and dialogue about it. And since then I've gone through, spiritual therapy and a long time of cognitive therapy. And more than that, I have implemented every part of those two practices that I did into my everyday life. So I employ cognitive therapy every day. I meditate every day. I change my diet. I exercise. I mean, I'm going to be 54 this month, and I feel like I'm 35. And I,
Yeah,
it's
you
just
look
because,
like you're 25.
oh, stop it. Thank you. Anyway, so I think that that's the main thing because we're fed lies, we're fed preservatives, we're fed fat, we're fed hormones, we're fed nitrates through all the meats and the cheeses and all these boxed foods that we eat, right? And I think it's important for us to like realize that we are the only thing we can control in our life is our reaction or response to a situation or something, and also what goes into our body and then how we treat our body. That's purely our control. And if we are able to, consciously realize that and that our consciousness does affect those around you. And if you don't believe me, I'll give you some examples, but that's kind of where I'm at. That's where my journey has taken me.
Well, yeah, let's hear some examples just for, those that may not be believing in this.
Okay. So my girlfriends and I, we talk about this all the time. If we're, let's say, and this is like a total like girl thing, I guess, but let's say you get dressed up and you're going to go out with your friends, let's say, and going to go out to dinner and maybe dancing or whatever and have fun or whatever. And you're all pretty and stuff. You just don't feel good though. You just don't really kind of not in the mood, maybe whatever is happening in your life, but you already committed. So you go, right? And everybody is having a good time and you kind of are having a good time, but nobody really talks to you, like nobody really gravitates towards you, right? And then this happens all the time, right? And then you go, let's say, to the grocery store and you throw your hair up in a bun, you've got yoga pants on, and you're in the produce section. All of a sudden, you feel good, you feel great, you're happy, your essence is just shining out. And you have people talking to you, asking you questions, saying you have pretty hair. Like it's just that energy field that we emit out. It does affect those around us. And it doesn't matter if you don't say anything. You can smile. You can have a straight resting bitch face, I call it, right? Either one of those things, right, are going to make a difference to the people around you. And people pick up that energy. So that's like I say all the time. And, when I do a lot of public speaking about suicide and mental health, I say, you don't know the smallest thing that you can do that might save a person's life or at least change their day. Go to the grocery store. Do you see an attractive woman and you're a woman? Tell the woman, man, you look beautiful today. And if you see an older gentleman who's struggling with his cart or this door or whatever, help that older gentleman out and say, thank you, you know, sir. If you know a military member that served in the military, thank them for their service. I mean, it's like the smallest things add up so big. Kindness is huge. It's like the number one thing that our world is missing is kindness.
Yeah, you're right. And it is contagious. And it comes back to you, you know, it's a form of like the law of attraction, I believe. And you're absolutely right about the stigma. I think, you know, there's this stigma of people think that, you know, someone's weak if they make a suicide attempt. So that makes that person scared to even bring it up into public, because why would they want to be viewed in any of these negative ways? But you're right. That's the only way that they're going to, you know, get any help or anyone's even going to know about it is if they say something. And that's a huge first step that people need to take, right?
I mean, it is. And I mean, I have 5 grown children and they're all wonderful human beings and they're all in their little different paths. And I'm pretty close to all of them and I'm really proud of them, of course. But when I did this in 2015, they were pissed at me. I mean, I had suffered for, I'm going to say, most of my adult life with a lot of mental illness, you know, depression, overwhelming anxiety, you know, just an overwhelming sadness all the time, you know, and overwhelmed. I mean, I was a single mother with 5 children. I can't describe the amount of work that goes into that, but it's a lot. Yeah. And it's hard to sometimes, even if you don't have kids, to balance like your personal life and your professional life and, you know, everything else in between. So, you know, for a long time, I felt overwhelmed and I felt guilty because there were times where I went to the grocery store and instead of going home to my 5 wonderful cherubs, I wanted to keep driving past the house and not look back, right? Because I was overwhelmed and I had tremendous guilt with that. But the things that we have to remember in this life is that's a human emotion. So that's unless you're a saint, that is like a natural thing to feel like when you're overwhelmed and you just don't want to face it. So you can't beat yourself up. The important thing is to recognize it. And I think that's where we go back to we'll circle back to the mental health and the suicide ideations, you know, recognizing somebody who's in trouble, recognizing somebody who isn't coping very well. The signs can be very subtle. You know, it doesn't have to specifically be drug abuse or, you know, outlandish behavior. Before my brother died, he made peace with all of his relatives that he had any issues with. He gave a few things away. I was just like, oh, this is like the nice Leonard. This is like the mellow Leonard. He's a kinder, gentler kind of guy. You know, I didn't recognize the signs. I didn't see that, you know, he was saying goodbye. And I think that that's really important. If you see somebody's behavior shift tremendously from either like super, super angry to like Gandhi, you know, super, super like, you know, peace, love and the whole, I mean, that's great if it's a transformational shift in your energy, but most likely if they've been suffering from something, it could be a sign that, you know, and by the way, I have a sister who passed away too from, we say it's suicide. She never drank and then she drank a lot and she died from cirrhosis of the liver. She drank herself to death within a few months. So I call it suicide because she knew she was doing it and she did it on purpose to end her life. So I've had 2 siblings basically kill themselves, one longer than the other, but both. And both of them suffered greatly from mental stress. And my sister, I knew about, and we tried to reach, but we couldn't. My brother, we had no idea.
And it's very unfortunate that you can't rely on, first of all, veterans with the military industrial complex. There's no support or help or anything there. And it just, you know, perpetuates and makes everything worse, of course. And then we have our medical system, which never addresses, you know, underlying conditions or nutrition or the roots of the problems. It just gets people hooked on drugs and pharmaceuticals.
Oh, so like the pill at it.
So the institutions are no help either.
Well, I'm going to read this just real quick because I was looking up some information for the, you know, for the viewers of the podcast. But okay, so as of September 30th, 2021, military suicides rise 15% as senior leaders call for action. And so this is the number of U.S. military suicides jumped by 15% last year, fueled by significant increases in the Army and Marine Corps that senior leaders called troubling. They urge more effort to reverse the trend. Now, that's just active duty. That's not veterans. Okay? So here we have...
Of course, they have to take care of their active soldiers. I mean, they want them to be killing machines, right?
Right. So then let's look at this. Veterans suicide rate in veterans has gone up 27% since COVID's hit. So instead of 22 a day, we're at 27 a day that they know of. Who knows how many homeless veterans are killing themselves, and we don't even count them. But that's what they know of. And what is our military answer? Well, this really is horrible, but we don't know what to do. And it stays there. There's no action. And I have contacted two congressmen, one in Florida, because he supposedly is all for the vets. I'm not a constituent, and one in Texas. And I got the party line. Oh, well, love to help you, Ms. Michalski, but, you know, party line, we're, you know, our hands are tied as Republicans, you know, the Democrats have tied our hands. We can't get any funding for anything. So you're just kind of like on your own. But hey, we have a pilot program that we're, you know, instituting where we're going to contract with civilian, you know, licensed therapists and counselors and psychiatrists and psychologists. And we're going to broaden the ability to service veterans for mental health issues. Okay, that's great. So when is that going to come out? We're thinking like a year. I go, oh, okay, Congressman. So a year. So what about the 10,000 vets that kill themselves between our conversation and your little pilot program being launched? What about all those people and those families? Because it's not just when my brother died, he had three kids, a daughter who's a senior in high school. It devastated his children. He's got his first grandson, first grandchild. He's never going to meet. I mean, this is like you throw a rock in a pond and you see that ripple go out. It's a ripple effect. And it's not just our family. It affected his friends. It affected his coworkers. It affected everything around him. And we lost a really good, in my opinion, American hero. He was awarded after his death for, you know, rescuing a group of Marines and landing a helicopter that was shot down safely. So my brother was a badass. And he's one of 27 a day that are killing themselves. It's just like, I don't know what to do to wake people. You know, they'd rather post, you know, kids cussing on TikTok or, you know, I don't know, the Kardashians than like look at how many people are killing themselves in our country every day.
Yeah. As far as the military goes, you know, maybe it might have to do something with it's not natural to kill your fellow human beings, and that's what we're sending them over there to do. I don't know. You know, one of my opinions. But you mentioned how, you know, after COVID, there's been a spike. I'm sure that's all around the board, not just with the military. Is this something that you've noticed, like after 2020, that there has been a spike generally in suicides?
So this is interesting. Depends on what news agency you subscribe to.
Of course.
Who do you want to believe, right? So in 2019, there was roughly 40,000 and change people who died by suicide. Now they're trying to tell, there are some agencies that are reporting that number went down in 2020. I find that almost impossible to believe, only because, right, you're talking people lost their jobs, their cars, their homes.
Well, they were probably classifying suicides as COVID deaths too. So, you know.
I know, right? Oh, well, he shot himself in the head, but oh, he tested positive for COVID. So,
right.
You know. And I don't say that willy-nilly, trust me. I'm saying that I'm sure that has happened. So, according to the Kaiser Family Foundation, it's a nonprofit organization focused on national health issues as well as the U.S. role in global health policy. So, it's a nonpartisan entity. Suicide ideations and suicidal thoughts have jumped up 23% in young people between the ages of 18 and 24. Suicide in our country is the number two cause of death between children from 10 years old to 24 years old. So it's the number two cause of death. It remains the number 10 cause of death overall. Middle-aged white men are the most prone to suicide. And that has exponentially grown. And then female veterans have jumped 300% in the last 10 years.
Wow, that's insane. Now, as far as, you know, this period of time with COVID and everything that's happening surrounding it, you know, I know it's hard to gauge based on the media's numbers and everything going around like that, but based on what your personal experience in your organization and people you've worked with, what have you seen? Have you seen a difference since, you know, post 2020?
Well, to be quite honest with you, I mean, I can't get real numbers. Before it's COVID, I had no problem getting numbers on suicides, suicide attempts. I do know that in 2019, like I said, there was over 43,000. There was over a 500,000 attempts in this country for suicide, by the way. So I do know that. I do talk to a lot of people that are, you know, like I said, military and veterans, females and males, and they have all expressed exponential mental health crisis since COVID. I have listened to a lot of different podcasts with college students who have come out and said, yeah, I mean, this sucks. We can't go to class. We have no hybrid class. We have no interaction with people in our major. We have no, you know, we have no socialization whatsoever. It's just go to school at the computer from home and get your degree. And there's just, we're social creatures. We're meant to be with other people. That's how Homo sapiens are. That's why we have to be married and we have children. So alienating everybody from each other and isolating everybody from each other for two years. I wonder, like, the impact of long, like, my grandson is a little over a year old. He hasn't been around anybody until the last 2 months because my daughter was so freaked out about COVID, and understandable. I mean, that's her little baby, but I asked her, like, why is he so strange towards people? And she's like, Mom, he hasn't really met anybody else except me and my, you know, and her husband or the other grandparents since he's been born. So he's not used to seeing anybody or being around anyone. So imagine that effect when you're talking like a 1-year-old, a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old, and all they see is if their parents are watching the news and they see people tackling each other who don't have a mask on, or they see, you know, people yelling at each other in a store who, you know, a mask on, and they're forced to wear a mask, and they're, oh no, you can't go outside. You can't go out in the front yard and play because you might get COVID from the air. Like, it's, we're creating a fear generation. That generation is going to live in fear unless we do something about it.
Yeah. And speaking of the fear aspect to it, I'm very interested and kind of scared to see over the next couple of years, you know, the suicide rate at, just as one thing that would occur because of people losing their job because of this, because of people not being able to travel or work or do anything anymore. You know, we don't know how far this is going to go with restrictions or passports and everything like that. People's livelihoods are on the line. And of course, that affects people's emotional states and rate of suicide, I would imagine, right?
I mean, if you want me to point out statistics that I can verify, I can't say yes, but I mean, common sense would prevail.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking, people are punching out hostesses in New York City that are asking, hey, I need to see your vaccination passport. And, you know, that she gets tackled by a group of Texans and kind of beat up because she asked for a vaccine because they're not. And I want to make it the record here. I will not get the vaccine. And I have very good research to back up why. I'm not going to go into it, but I will not. I'm not anti-vaccine. Okay. I've had my mumps, measles, rubella, all of them, polio, the whole night, you know, tetanus, all of it. Those are tried and true vaccinations that were grew in eggs and tested over a long, long time. Not something that was, you know, hurried up in a year to get out to the mass public to make them feel better about a pandemic. Right. So when we talk about this, let's talk about this with intelligence. Just because of anti-COVID vaccine for my person, now if you're your own person, if you choose to go out and get the vaccination, that is all new. Okay. More power to you. If that makes you feel good, if that's your truth, then go do it. But don't hop on my butt because I'm not going to do it. And by the way, you can still get COVID, die from COVID, and spread COVID with the vaccination. So I don't know why it's like we're like the redheaded stepchildren of society here if we don't want to get the vaccination.
Yeah, That's exactly that, and terrorists, and much worse. We become every name in the book. You know, conspiracy theorists, white supremacists, terrorists, anything that'll demonize us.
And who made up the terms conspiracy theorists?
Right. Yeah, that was the CIA. But
yeah, of course. Yeah. And yeah. Why?
That was to get people to stop looking into the Kennedy assassination, of course.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. If anybody doubts what I'm saying about the U.S. government, look up the Tuskegee. Thank you.
Yeah.
Experiment. I couldn't say it. I'm like, what is it? In Alabama.
Yeah.
And then come back to me and tell me about my views on the COVID vaccine.
Yes, exactly. I want to get your thoughts on modern psychiatry and psychologists when it comes to discussions of suicide. I mean, do you think that it seems like they're just, you know, throwing away prescriptions as well to try and mask this instead of getting to the root of the problem? What do you think?
I'll give you a great example of what I think about that. So I try to take my life with a bottle of Xanax and a magnum of champagne. That's a lot of drugs. Okay?
Yeah.
I slept for 2 days, but yeah. And when I woke up and came out of my little stupor and I got better and I was getting better and I started changing my life. Like I said, it was a slow process, right? I was still suffering from anxiety and depression. You know, you don't just magically wake up and go, woo, I'm better. You know, that takes it's a long process, right? So about a year after, I was suffering some, and I had some personal issues. I was married at the time and my husband was a severe alcoholic and he was totally verbally abusive. So I was going through some like depression. So I went to a new counselor and everything, and she offered me Xanax. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's on par.
I killed myself with Xanax.
Yeah.
More Xanax. Yeah. I didn't take it. And it wasn't because I was worried about I was going to swallow a whole bottle again, but it was like, no, that's not what I'm asking for. I want you to listen to me.
Okay. So the psychiatrist gave you Xanax for going there for trying to kill yourself. This is amazing. This is exactly what I'm talking about.
I tried to kill myself with Xanax.
I know.
Back, and they were like, hey, we'll give you Xanax. And I'm like, no.
This is exactly what I'm talking about.
To listen to me. I want you just to hear me and give me some ways of like coping with this, like healthy, like,
yeah.
Should I up my exercise? Should I go to, I don't know. I mean, I was on my spiritual journey then. I mean, should I go to church? Like what can I do that isn't going to involve a drug to get myself better?
It's like asking a doctor about nutrition. Their eyes just cross and everything glazes over.
It's so funny because that old saying, like you are what you eat. And then when I spout off on my little like, you know, soapbox about like, you know, treat yourself good, you know, eat well, exercise, even if you only walk a mile or two a day, try to maintain a positive attitude. I mean, of course, shitty things are going to happen to you. It happened to everybody every day. They just do it because it happens. Right. But you have a choice of how you handle that. You can make that ruin your day, your week, your month, your year, or you can take that, look at it, assess it, deal with it and move on. I mean, those are your choices. Those all go back to personal free will.
Yeah. And it's all around the board, unfortunately, when it comes to the mainstream medical industry and pharmaceuticals. You know, I'm honestly afraid to go to the doctor just because I might get misdiagnosed with something and they might want to put me on pharmaceuticals for the rest of my life, because that's the way they roll. They want to have patients for the rest of their lives that get hooked on whatever they're going to give them, so they keep coming back. They're not trying to cure you or fix you from anything. The only time they're useful is maybe if you break a leg or have to have surgery or something.
So I'm going to unpack a little bit what you said. First of all, when we start having clinics in a pharmacy, like Rite Aid and CVS have little minute clinics you can walk in. And does anybody else see a problem with that?
Yeah.
I mean, when doctors are incentivized to prescribe opiates and other drugs, again, we have a problem with that. I have friends in Europe. They're like, half of the stuff you guys eat at an American supermarket would not even be allowed in our country.
Yeah.
Because of the preservatives and the dyes and the nitrates and the hormones and our beef and our meats and stuff. If you are what you eat and you are who you surround yourself by, and I truly believe that, then you have to make changes if you want to get better all around the board. It's not just like, well, I'm going to go on a keto diet and I'm going to lose 40 pounds. I'm going to be better. No. And by the way, doctors are practicing medical doctors. They're practicing. Yes, they're much smarter than me. They've gone to tons of school. They know a lot more about the human anatomy than I do. Yes, but they're practicing medical doctors. We have to remember that. They don't know everything. They don't. And they're not treating the cause. Most likely, a lot of times they treat the symptoms.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, you're exactly
so
right.
So, you know, I'm depressed. I'm sad. Okay, you're depressed and sad. Here, take a Xanax so you sleep a lot.
Yeah.
No, that's it's not going to help my depression or my sadness. Like, I want to know why I'm depressed and sad. Right? Now, that is a soul deep dive. To kind of go into that place and realize why you're sad or depressed. And I'm going to say that not, you know, I think everybody's capable of doing it. I don't think a lot of people want to do it because there's some scary shit down there when you go down there deep and you realize like, oh, this is why I'm depressed. Oh, this is why I'm sad. Oh, this is why I'm angry. Because you have to face stuff that you've never thought you would have to face. Like the trauma in my childhood, I don't sit here and think of it on a daily basis, right? But in order to get better, I had to face it. And that was hard. It was very, very hard. And I think that my brother never did. And then I think compiling, you know, his job to what he did and the amount of death he saw and caused, I think, you know, God bless his soul. I think it consumed him.
Now, before we move on and talk a little bit about the book that you're working on, how can, if people are worried about a family member or a friend or someone that they love and they're not sure, first of all, you know, what are some of the things they can look for, some of the signs, and what should they do if they have concerns?
Well, I think any severe change in behavior, if you're older and you have things like adult toys, like, motorcycles, art, I don't know, whatever it is, you know, things, and you start just giving it away, right? Things that you've always loved and cherished and coveted, and you just start getting, you know, you see somebody giving it away. If they become very distant, they don't leave the house much, they go to work, they come home, that's it. They don't answer the phone, they don't really text back. They become very reclusive, you know? I think those are telltale signs. Anger, of course. You know, if they become really angry and their temper seems to flare up, you know, maybe they had a bad temper before, but it's even worse. Or like my brother didn't have a bad temper, but my brother was really intense and very, you know, when he believed in something, he believed in it 100%. There was just no other way. And that's the way he was. And that's what made him super successful. He was brilliant. So if that changes where they go from like this, like really intense kind of like, no, listen to me, to like, oh, the world is great. And, you know, this is awesome. And I love everybody and I'm not mad at anybody anymore. And I'm making peace with everybody. Like it's a shift in behavior and it's noticeable. I think the best thing to do is talk to them because you might notice it and they might start going through that, not realizing what they're preparing to do or why they're feeling that way. And maybe they're not feeling that way, but maybe they're going through something. I really need somebody to talk to, but they, especially men, do not know how to approach another person on how, you know, to talk about their mental health. They most men are afraid of admitting like, yes, I have anxiety, or yes, I suffer from depression, or yes, I'm alone. I feel alone. I don't have anybody to come home to at night. I'm all by myself in this world, or whatever that is. Men have a harder time articulating that, or at least getting it out. And I think that's the first thing, give them the opportunity to get that out, to feel safe. So, and then if you're really worried about it, depending on their age, I mean, if they're younger and you're the parent of that person, I would say call somebody who specializes. So if it's a veteran, then call somebody, a psychiatrist or psychologist that deals in PTSD or veteran mental health. If it's a teenager girl, call somebody who deals with teenagers. You know, their teenagers' brains are special. They're not fully formed. You know, they're going through a tremendous amount of changes with their, you know, hormones and puberty and everything. So it's important to realize the patient before you try to help them seek treatment, right? You have to take that into consideration. And elderly elderly suicide's gone up too, unfortunately, you know? So you just got to really watch that, and you've got to like pay attention to the signs and also do a little bit of research, you know, find out what person or agency in their area deals with that specific mental health demographic. That's very important.
Yeah, and it's very important, you know, the awareness that you bring and everything going on right now, especially during these times, because mental health is like being, mental illness really is being promoted, it's being advertised, it's the ideal state for people, you know, for those that are in power. They want people to be pretty much mentally disabled and mentally challenged, and that's the desired state that they want society. So it's very important that you know, the work you're doing and the awareness that that's being brought about this stuff right now. So thank you for that.
No, you're
Now,
welcome. And I mean the I think they're trying to dumb I mean I don't think they're trying to dumb us down. I mean,
yeah.
the education I received as a child to the education that my children received, and then the education I see kids have now, night and day, night and
Yes.
day. I mean, I learned to read at like I think 5 or 4, and I was an exceptional student when I was younger. But my point being is like, we're dumbing ourselves down by preservatives. If you don't think cheese isn't powdered and it's not bright orange,
Yeah.
it's not, okay? That's macaroni and cheese. It's macaroni and preservatives is what it is. Our cows do not need growth hormones, and we don't need to, pump everything with nitrates. Do you know what they do to chickens? They
Oh,
soak them in
gosh.
their own feces and liquid for 24 hours to weigh them down before they sell them.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
When I tell you this, it's like I watch documentaries and I read, and I'm like, and that's why my friends in Europe are like, half the stuff that you guys eat in the United States, we wouldn't even be allowed
Yeah.
to have that in our country. Our government won't allow that in our country. And did you know, I was told today, and I'm going to verify this, but I'm going to say it, and then I'm going to fact check it so you all can fact check this too. Somebody told me today that we're the only country in the world that advertises drugs.
I wouldn't be surprised. I really wouldn't. And you're talking about, you know, how the indoctrination through education system is worse now. And yeah,
Oh, it's
you're
horrible.
right, you know, but if you look back, you know, you were indoctrinated through our education system, the generation before yours, the generation before that. I mean, since, you know, I probably the 40s and before,
World War
education
II.
system, yeah, World War II was the education system's been used to create good little slaves, and it's getting worse and worse, and the misinformation and delusional I guess subject matter that they're putting into our history books and academia is getting worse, so we're breeding just mindless zombies. So it has to end sometime, and I think we need to break these cycles soon before it gets any worse. Because I don't see how we could survive as a society if it gets any worse.
Right. And I know there might, or I don't know this. I will guess that will be some people watching this podcast and they'll say, oh, those two are conspiracy theorists, or those two, they're out there, they're
Of
crazy, blah, blah,
course.
blah, you know. And that's okay. Because even if you think I'm absolutely a lunatic, but I made you question something that you took as a fact, or that you took as, something that you thought you had right, and it makes you go read something and do a little bit of digging, and then you start to go down this rabbit hole, that will change your life. It will. It takes one thing to spark that.
Yeah, just that one thing, and you do the rest of the work. But hopefully people will have that spark and go want to do the rest of the research themselves, and that's what the show is all about, getting you to do your own research. Let's talk about your book that you're working on. I know it's based on kind of like a download that you have. How did this come about?
Well, like I said in the last show, and for those of you who didn't see it, I was in Greece in 2006, tooling around the country by myself. And last couple of days, I was outside of Athens, and I was in this little cafe, and I was sitting by myself, and everybody's coupled off, and it's kind of like a deck half in the water, half, you know, on the beach. And I heard a voice say, you know, write this down. And, you know, kind of looked around like, what, like, who's talking to me? And like, no, you got to write me down. And I had, you know, back in the day, I traveled with a pad of paper because I took notes on stuff, right? Because I love people watching. So I start writing. And it just comes rapid fire, like, my name's Afeda. This is what I'm, you know, I'm a being of light. This is what's going on. And you got to write my story. And so I just start writing this story. And it just turns out that unbeknownst to me, at this time, I had 4 children left. My son had gone off to college. And so when I got back to New Hampshire, where I was living, I, of course, got back into my routine. And the book, I would pull it out, work on it, put it back, pull it out, work on it, pull it back. It's kind of hard to, you know, raise 5 children and, you know, 4 children at the time and work and write a book. So now the kids are grown. I'm on, they're on their own. And now I have finished the book. I'm in editing now. And so basically it's a story of a little girl who lives in Los Angeles of all places, because I'm from Southern California. But at the time I started writing it, I was living in New Hampshire, and she has 1 green eye and 1 blue eye. And they're significant why her eyes are color different. And she comes from a long line of magical beings that used to control our existence basically on Earth. But I like to say on the realms. So in my book, I created 3 realms. So there's the kindred realm, the human realm, and then there's the shadow divide. And the shadow divide, and this is the biggest thing that I've realized, that our emotional state is a reaction because we don't know how to filter information, and we let fear take over us. And it makes us angry and scared and sad and causes guilt, and it causes all these like negative emotions. So the shadow divide is basically, for lack of better terminology, all the evil that men has wreaked on each other over the last few millennia. And it's created this hole, you know, in the realm, in the human realm. And this evil is growing stronger, and it feeds off of fear and guilt and anger and envy and lust and all these negative things. And the shadow divide is influencing our earth. And so there's like a lot of natural disasters and things like that that start to happen in the world. And people on the human side of existence start to kind of wake up a little bit, like, what's going on? This is my book. Just so happens it's kind of mirroring what's going on right now, right? But there's a lot of war and things like that. And so this little girl starts having these visions. She's about 8 years old, and her name's Afeda. And she starts having these visions, and she's told that she needs to cross over to the kindred realm, which is the realm of our souls. So that's our soul, our essence, our being, our connection to the divine. So we have basically splintered ourselves off because we've become so materialistically earthbound that we literally have disconnected from our soul in my book. And so she's the first being to cross over into the kindred realm, connect with her soul. And by doing that, she becomes kind of like a divinity in a way. And she rescues basically people from themselves, and through tragedy and sacrifice, you know, she rescues humanity. And so that's the first book. So the second book's already started. So that's basically it. And in my magical realm, or I call the kindred realm, there's a lot of creatures that I have created and everything. So it's kind of fun. It's called They Live in the Dominion, which is part of the kindred realm. So.
No, that's really cool. The voice that came to you whenever you first started interacting and writing this book, I know for me, after I had my unexplained contact experience in the beginning, I had a much different understanding of who and what I was interacting with than I do now. It's evolved, and I have a much different understanding of everything that's happened since. For you, has your understanding of what or who you were interacting with changed in any way since you first started writing?
I'm going to say that she opened my third eye. In other words, I could finally see that I was a divine being myself, and that I was connected to a higher consciousness. Like I said, though, unfortunately, that time in my life, I participated in that paradigm of this 3D reality we call life. And I was worried about the car and the house and the kids and soccer and, you know, softball and my job and savings account and all that stuff. Right. So I really didn't let it permeate me, per se. Now, as I got older, I will say that my transformation truly, I mean, I there was aware, and I've always been extraordinarily gifted psychically. I've done readings for people. I've done viewing, things like that in the past. So I always knew I had a gift, and I always knew that I was a little different than other people, but I really just didn't understand why or how. So that opened myself up to understanding that it's okay to be different and there is something else out there. But the real transformation literally happened when my brother died. When my brother died, that completely shifted everything I ever thought I knew about everything. My life changed. It was like 2 years before I tried to kill myself, and or actually 3 years, and I had healed and I was okay. I was doing really well when he died. Still in a really bad marriage at the time, and I was ending it. And then his death, I literally filed for divorce like a week later because I was like done, right? But it woke me the hell up. It made me realize like this is a very finite chance we have in this iteration of our life. We have 0 to 100 and something years to make an impact in our lives and those around us. And so since then, I have diligently tried to recognize that I am special. I do have a gift. I do want to share it. And that maybe by sharing this, I can get other people to start waking up as well. And that's kind of why I did the nonprofit. Honestly, it was obviously to help other, you know, veterans and people suffering from mental illness. Also to get people to be okay to talk about this, right? The podcast, The Ancient Gift, it's approaching these subjects of paranormal, suicide. It can be really anything from a multidisciplinary aspect where you have doctors and clergymen and laymen and me as a, you know, moderator, bringing all these people together and talking about this subject and really unpacking it. And so I think that in 2018 really was my wake up. I think that's really when I kind of like woke up. It was like I'd been in a coma most of my life. And I was like, whoa, like there is huge things out there. And the last 2 years since COVID, exponentially, my journey has taken, you know, a turn that I would have never, ever expected. I'm sorry, my dog keeps, I'm going to take you for a walk in a minute.
No worries at all. Yeah. This has been like the past few years have been really huge for awakening of a mass consciousness, of a collective consciousness on our planet. And I think that if we didn't have all the inhibitors that were in place from, you know, the indoctrination system, education system, our medical mafia, pharmaceuticals, all the stuff that we talked about, if we could have, you know, had our natural selves in play, I'm wondering during this time if this evolution period of consciousness would have just been exponentially greater and we could be at a, you know, greater point in our evolution collectively on this planet. I'm thinking, yes, we probably could have, you know?
Well, think about it. I mean, you just said like five things in there that I could go into detail. Like one, in the 19th century, average American ate 16 teaspoons of sugar. We eat 16 pounds a year now. Sugar is more addicting than heroin.
Yeah.
What does sugar do? Sugar is addictive for me. It causes obesity. It causes diabetes. It causes your, you know, internal organs like your pancreas, messes with your liver, messes with your, you know, kidneys, causes high blood pressure. And what is sugar in? Everything. Everything. We go down a grocery store aisle, everything you look at has got sugar in it.
Yep.
That wasn't 100 years ago. We didn't have grocery stores with that. People were healthy. Yes, they didn't live longer because there was, you know, disease. We have the medical technology we have for like, you know, diseases and everything, but people lived a lot healthier. Right?
Yeah.
I'm in college right now. I'm going to graduate here, thank God, in a couple months and then on to my master's. But the history that I get taught, I'm a history major.
Must be frustrating.
That's a whole other show.
Yeah.
The stuff that I read and the indoctrination about globalization and like everybody, you know, it's a total indoctrination program. And who's doing it? Why do they want to dumb us down? Why do they want to make us unhealthy? Why are they doing this population?
Yeah.
I don't want to
And
say.
You mentioned living longer. I think maybe ancients, you know, before we've had some resets, probably did live a lot longer. I mean,
yeah.
If you look at Sumerian kings list, these dudes mm-hmm. were living like thousands of years, you know, supposedly. So I think that we do have the potential to live very long time despite of disease or whatever else is out there. I think a lot of that was introduced to us anyway, but that's just my opinion. You know, I think
oh, no,
we have the potential
not true,
to be,
Chris, come
you know.
on. That's from animals. It's
right.
animal husbandry. You know, we were rumors, hunters and gatherers for thousands
yeah.
and thousands of years with no Christianity, you know, Judaism or Islam. And we just wandered around and killed stuff and ate, you know, raw grass and stuff. And then we domesticated animals and then disease happened. Come on now.
Right.
Get on the same page. That's what they teach you.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
we're only 6,500 years old. I mean, we're older than that, we know, but that's modern, you know. Yeah, we're like go back late Tempe, you know, it's what carbon dated to 12,600 years.
Yep.
Sophisticated
yeah.
societies, and you know, it's crazy.
Yeah, we're actually entering some really, you know, even though they're terrifying and they can be quite nerve-wracking at times, we're in fascinating times with discoveries that, you know, independent researchers and people are coming out with and talking about, the ones that aren't afraid to get offed by the government. You know, we've got a lot of whistleblowers. We've got a lot of brave people coming out right now, which I'm proud of. And I hope that continues throughout these ages so that it can topple the system. And maybe we can get back to a time where people do live longer and where there aren't all these problems and we don't have to worry about a oogada boogada jab anymore. I don't know. I'm hopeful about that. But thank you so much for coming on, April. Before you go, tell us a little bit more about what we should expect from your podcast, The Ancient Gift.
Well, I think the first show I'm in production right now, it's going to be about suicide. And I'm going to have the Abrahamic religions represented. And I will have a psychiatrist. I would like to have a medium. So I'm talking to a couple right now, a witch, not sure yet. And then I'm going to have somebody who survived a suicide attempt, and then also somebody who survived a loved one taking their life. And I'm going to bring everybody together, and we're going to have a really direct and authentic conversation about it, about approach it from all sides, as well as an anthropologist, I think. Just because, you know, let's face it, back, you know, thousands of years ago, like in Japan, suicide was a noble action. You know, there are many, many cultures around the world that suicide wasn't, you know, stigmatized. It was actually a you know, badge of honor in some respects. And in no way am I encouraging it, by the way. I'm the opposite, but I'm saying, right. I think that I want to present a well-rounded conversation about a subject like this to really unpack it and to get the dialogue going so people can reach out for help and can talk about it to understand, like, you know, I've had people tell me, you know, they don't think about it. Like, your brother is really selfish, or, oh yeah, he went right to hell. And it comes out of their mouth
yeah.
and they don't even know that they're saying it to me. And my mouth is open. Like, my brother's not in hell. I talk to him all the time. Like, I don't, like, who are you to make a passive judgment on somebody who took their life? You mentioned how much pain you have to be to end your life. What torture that is in your mind that you must go through every single day to want to not live. So
yeah.
I want to have that conversation. And I don't think I could have another subject to start my podcast that would be more beneficial right now in our current times. And what you said earlier, you know, we're living in interesting times. I'm not afraid and I'm not spreading fear. Yes, there is an age of ending here. We are ending the way things used to be, the status quo, the norm, and we're entering into another age. It doesn't mean it's bad. It just means it's different. And it's our choice to participate in that age the way, you know, what we do, our actions matter. So collectively, we have to approach that in that, like, positive way.
Yes, very well said. April, I'm so looking forward to producing your podcast on the network. That's going to be awesome. And then reading your book when it comes out. We're going to have you back on to get deeper into that and have some more awesome discussions.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate you inviting me back on and giving me a platform to speak my truth.
Yes, yes. It's a It's awesome. The work you're doing is great, and people need to hear it. So thank you again for coming on. And until next time, everyone, have an excellent evening. We'll talk again tomorrow.
Thank you.